Good evening. I hope you're all well. Please join me in saying Liana Bekoach. Ana Bekoach Gedula Chemincha Tati Tzerura Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi. The two letters for the month of Shvat are the Tzadi and the Bet. The Tzadi created the constellation Deli, which is Aquarius, and also the month of Shvat, which is the month we're in. Today, I believe, is the fourth or the fifth of Shvat. The Bet is the letter that created the planet Shabtai, Saturn. The gematria of the two letters together is 92. 92 and 91 are equivalent in gematria rules. And we know that 91 is the unity of the spiritual and the physical worlds, which is what the revelation of light, of wisdom, is in the month of Shvat. The gematria of the first letters of the six words we say for the first verse is 506, which is the same gematria as the phrase Ahavatinam, unconditional love. Kaberinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu No Ra Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun. Kufre Shayan is a word means tear up. Sintet Nun is how you spell the name Satan. Tear up the Satan, tear up the negativity. The same six letters can be rearranged to spell two other words, Sha'ar Katan, small gates, to remind us to be careful in what we see, hear, taste, smell, or talk. Keep your gates, your small gates, the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth. Be careful with them. Be careful what you let in. Be careful what you send out. Na Gibor Dor She'ehudcha Keva Sham Reim. Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. Nun Gimel Dalet has a gematria of 57, which is the Hebrew word Zan, which means Parnassah, sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is the sequence that we utilize to take back the energy we've given to the negative side through our mistakes. Barachem Tacharem Rachamei Sidkatcha Tamid Gamleim. Bet Tet Resh, Tzadi Taf Gimel. Chasin Kadosh Berov Tuvcha Na'el Adatach. Chet Kuf Bet Tet Nunayim. Yachid Geya Lamcha Pene Zokre Kedushatach. Yud Gimel Lamed Pei Zayin Kuf. It's a sequence that we utilize to help speed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium. Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tsuyakatenu Yodea Talumot Shin Kufav Tzadi Yud Tav. The first two letters, Shin and Kuf, have a gematria of 400, which represents 4 times 10 times 10. The 10 Sefirot within the 10 Sefirot within the four worlds. to number of perfection. The last four letters, Vav, Tzad, Yud, Tav, have a gematria of 506, the same as the first letters, the same as Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love. And it teaches us that the creative process starts with love and progresses step by step with love to its completion, to its manifestation, utilizing love in the perfection of all of the worlds. And the last verse we say in a whisper, which we refer to as being silent, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Le'olam Vayed. I'm reading from the Zohar now, from the third section titled Crocodiles, and it's verse 37. Vayhi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Adenu Kunenei Aleinu Maasei Adenu Kunenehu Umoshe Dachil Mine Vela Kari Vela Legabe Inun Yorin Vinun Dargin Dile Aval Legabe Dachil Vela Kariv Begin Dechama Le Mishtaresh Visharashin Ilain. Moshe was afraid and approached only the rivers that were at his grade, but he feared the serpent itself and did not approach because he saw that it was rooted in high sources. The verse is dealing with a metaphor. The Torah says, Bo, come. The verse says, Bo el Kvaro, and which means come to Pharaoh. And we would normally say, go to Pharaoh. Or we would say, come with me to Pharaoh. And the Zohar is explaining that metaphorically, we need to go into ourselves with Hashem to root out the negativity which is represented by the word crocodile in this verse and in the serpents in this verse. It's a metaphor explaining how we can root out our own negativity by looking at our actions and looking at our motivations. This is what restriction teaches us to do. Tonight is the second class on reincarnation. I think there may actually even be a third class, depending on what's going on with that. But before I start, does anybody have any questions about last week or on any other subject?
On earthquakes.
On earthquakes. The question is, why was there an earthquake in Haiti?
It was the poorest of what the fourth one of the poorest countries.
The poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, one of the poorest countries in the world. French speaking. What? Why there? Was that the question, or what? What about the earthquakes? All natural disasters, earthquakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, tornadoes, things that destroy, natural events that destroy, come because Satan is given permission to wreak his destruction, to wreak his havoc. So the question that is being asked is why the earthquake takes place at a given place in time. So the Zohar tells us in many places need to look at the opposite part of the globe. And that's telling you whatever nation is at the opposite part of the world, that nation's chieftain, the angel who's responsible for that nation, responsible for receiving God's goodness and sharing it out to each of its member net of the nation, is being replaced. That nation is having a change of spiritual governments. When you have an earthquake on land, like you have here in Haiti this past week, you have to look at the negativity of those people. But ultimately, every person in the sound of the news who heard of the earthquake has some degree of connection to the shaking up that God is sending us. How? The earth shakes as a wake-up call. Wake up! Now, the people who die, who are buried, there are four methods of death described in the Torah. There is strangling, there is burning, there is stabbing, and there is stoning. People who die in an earthquake did actions of negative actions that require their death to be in the frame of stoning. So that's why they will die being crushed by a building. It's as if they were stoned to death. The same thing can apply to those people who get burned in fires. Their deaths were required to go that way. And so forth. What people don't understand is that we live in a world of perfect justice. And when the Torah says doing this action means you're going to have this kind of death, it means that person will die in that way. It doesn't have to be a human court that demands it. It just has to be that they didn't do tshuva. They are always given time to do tshuva. Well, if not always, then most of the time. And these physical effects, these natural disasters, cause people to experience one of these four deaths when it's appropriate for them. When the Satan is given permission to wreak his havoc, it means people whose time is not yet up can be caught up in that catastrophe. They have done something to be in that generation, in that location, at that time, to have the effect happen to them. So it's not that they're innocent. They did something in previous lifetimes. But it comes to them as the way of cleansing what they need to have cleansed. If we were living in biblical times and there was courts that ordered stoning, or the Romans' favorite form of death, which is really not a humane method of death, but crucifixion. Crucifixion, actually, the reason that people died is they suffocated, which is another form of strangling. So a court, human court, would order someone to be crucified. It would mean that that person needed to have that form of death from their actions in that lifetime or in a previous lifetime. Now, we live in more civilized times, quote unquote, and so people who need to be hung to die through the form of strangulation, they come down with the disease called emphysema, which means they can't breathe, and eventually causes their death through strangulation. Now, during this process, we live with a more merciful time. They have a longer period of time to do tshuva. answer as to why the country of Haiti has come under this kind of catastrophe and has had all of this negativity. If you understand anything about Haiti, you know it's the home of voodoo, which is a very negative idol worshiping religion. So, by the same token, that doesn't mean that we are excused from helping the victims. So whatever tzedakah we can give, we should give. Whatever we can do in donating time and energy and in helping people in this area, we should give.
How can we donate to people in
There are people who pick themselves up and go there. Who's to say that you shouldn't do that? If you have that thought, then, you know, it may be that you, after you do the restriction, you may decide to do that. Other people don't have that need. They won't receive that thought. Just there is no, you know, the one interesting aspect that I got from this in watching some of the news services, CNN, who is not a balanced reporting system when it comes to Israel. They constantly do not report Israel in a balanced way. They report Israel more negatively than they do the Palestinians. But in one of the CNN news reports, they reported that the only hospital that literally works in Haiti as of yesterday was the Israeli hospital. Israel had sent a team of medical people. They do to every major disaster. It's part of their outreach. It's part of who the Jewish nation is. They send people to help. They send equipment to help. They help send all kinds of things. And in this particular case, one of the things they sent was a hospital. They have literally a field hospital, like they were in a war zone. But they're the only ones who sent the equipment and have equipment that's operational. The other hospitals don't have the equipment. They have some few doctors and some nurses and some tents, but they don't really have medical equipment to save people. They can't do operations. And of the major, well, the report was saying this one hospital had something like 50 people that needed operations. They were trying to find other hospitals that would take them, and the only people that took them were the Israelis, and they couldn't take all 50. They took what they could, what they were specialized in. So it's just an indication of, and I hope I've answered your questions of why. Another aspect of earthquakes is why is there an earthquake? And literally, the earth represents the desire to receive, and as the desire to receive, it's constantly growing. The seven different plates that push up against each other represent the desire to receive of the human race. And they're constantly growing in different directions and different approaches. That's why the mountains grow an inch a year. That's why there are earthquakes. This is all part of the spiritual system. There is no need for an earthquake that is devastating. There is no need for an earthquake that hurts people. The earth will grow, the plates will grow in an orderly fashion if people would learn to do restriction. There would be no need for these catastrophic events. But we live in times that people think they know what they're doing instead of following the recommendations that are found in the Torah and in the prophets. I hope I answered your questions. Any other questions before we go on to tonight's class?
Yeah. Even in Haiti,
everybody is affected, but people with money feel they have a protection shield. So the people with money then can go and find if 10 buildings were destroyed and one is standing, the person with the most money is going to say, I want that shelter, and he will pay to have that in his power. Perhaps they do. The reality is they don't. They just, it's an illusion that they do. Everybody who is in an earthquake zone has a correction, a tikkun with earthquakes, which ultimately represents the desire to receive for oneself alone. We all live in Los Angeles sitting in this room. Los Angeles is part of the earthquake zone around the Pacific Ocean. Every human being close to that zone, whether they're in China, whether they're in Japan, whether they're in Australia, whether they're in Alaska, whether they're in Hawaii, whether they're in California or Mexico or down in South America, every human being has some relationship to correcting their desire to receive, and that's why we live in this zone. When does it come? The earthquakes happen when the negativity grows to be too great. Then it's caused for destruction. Satan is given permission to wreak his havoc, and he chooses this mechanism because this mechanism has to do with lack of restriction. Those people who are hurt and die are for one reason. Those people who lose financial resources, it's another reason. Those people who have medical effects, a third reason. And ultimately, those people who are just shaken up in their room and thrown across the room in their bed, it's all a wake-up call. You're shaken to wake you up to connect to Hashem, to learn to do restriction. That's what an earthquake is about. A hurricane, a tornado, an ice storm, these are all different reasons, different effects. And they affect you. You never hear about an ice storm in California because the people of California don't have that potential in their life. But I can tell you that there are people who live in California who find themselves in ice storms from time to time, meaning they flew in on business or they had a vacation, and all of a sudden, it means that was why they were put in that position at that time. Nothing happens in this world without Hashem's supervision, which means that there is nothing that happens that is bad. What we perceive as bad is a form of cleansing. We do have nothing to fear except our own desire to receive for oneself alone, and that we have the ability to change. I'm sorry? What about the orphans? What about them? Their correction is to live this life beginning as an orphan. It may sound harsh, and I don't mean to come across harsh. What's wrong with an orphan? What's so horrible about being an orphan? No, but they will find love in another way. It's a correction for them. They will learn, and they will have free choice about accepting what happens or not. The Torah says, in paraphrasing, be kind to the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. And on the physical level, an orphan is there for people with wealth, people with time, people who care to get out of their own desire to receive for oneself and help someone else. Like Angelina Jolie is an example. That's, you know, it. Even the Madonna is doing something about orphans in Malawi, which is another very poor country. The history of Haiti, for the last 500 years, 600 years that it's been inhabited by Western civilization, has all been focused on desire to receive for oneself alone, which manifests in the religion of voodoo. So they use and abuse the spiritual systems, and that's why the effect of the people living there is about. Any other questions? Again, I don't mean to be harsh or come across as sounding harsh. We live in a perfectly just world.
It's grateful to see that we could see all of that.
And for most people, it's painful or it's upsetting. And let's turn on the TV and watch something else.
I don't watch TV.
I'm being facetious. What is it saying? Gloria, it's painful. Gloria, it's painful to watch. How are you changing yourself?
It's painful because what do I do?
Gloria, we caused that earthquake. We don't live in Haiti, but we caused that earthquake because we did not change ourselves. Okay. So, yes, it's painful to watch. That pain that you feel is cleansing for you to cause you to change yourself more.
It's not to watch if I don't watch TV. Actually, I haven't been watching TV for less. I'm not interested. But I think about it. Even if we're not watching TV and we're talking about it in our mind.
I understand. We're thinking about it. We're affected by it. And to the extent that we change ourselves because we look at what comes to us, is the opportunity to change. What comes to us is this information about Haiti. That is the gift Hashem sends us to cause us to change ourselves. That's the reason that the earthquake happened. We are obviously less affected than someone living in Haiti. But in 1993, there was an earthquake in Los Angeles that you could drive down the street, and as I did, it happened at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and I was driving down the street on Ventura Boulevard and Coldwater Canyon, and I could see store after store that was trashed, but then you saw a store that had no broken glass at all. Store was broken, store wasn't broken. Store was broken, store wasn't broken. How do you explain why it happened here and not there? Well, science doesn't try and explain it, or if they do, they come up with mathematical curves about how the energy was transferred in the earth. But ultimately, the cause, why did this building crash and that one didn't? Why was this totally destroyed and that room stayed? This is all about desire to receive for oneself alone. We live in a world of perfect justice. We don't see it. We live in a world of illusion. But the true knowledge that Kabbalah gives us about certainty is knowing that this world operates on perfect justice. That means if you do a negative action, you will have that effect in your life. I didn't say when it would happen in your life, but it will happen. If, God forbid, you kill somebody by speaking about them badly, which is what Lashon Hara does, you're going to have something in your life. You're going to have to die in that same similar way. This is a world of perfect justice. When will it happen? Hopefully you'll do tshuva and it won't have to happen because you will have changed. and that negativity cannot find you. Any other questions?
I asked this before, but I forgot what your response was. Why did they stop?
We're going to talk about it tonight or the next week as we talk about reincarnation to answer why babies die. But quickly and briefly, babies die for the same reason that other people die. They did have a chance. Because there's a reason why you need to be in existence for X number of years or X number of days that represent the full cycle. And while you're looking and saying it's a baby who only has 700 days because they're two years old, the soul is looking at that it needed to be in the physical world for 10 times 7,000 days. And so lifetime after lifetime, they lived so many lives, but they didn't complete all of their physical days. So they needed to come into this lifetime to be in the physical body for those 700 days. At the end of that 700 days, they were taken. They had completed their tikkun. In that process, they gave other souls the opportunity to feel the pain of losing a child, to feel the pain of all the ripple effects of the negative, you know, the pain and suffering in the world. Even a stillborn had to be in the physical body, had to be in that soul in that body, in the fetus for that period of time to complete its physical process. Maybe there was a cesarean section last lifetime and it didn't have the full process. The doctor took the baby early, and so that many days it didn't have in the physical body, so it had to complete it by having a stillborn. All of it is related to each other. We live in a world of perfect justice. That's the truth. That's what people have to come to understand. The fact that I cannot understand specifically why this baby at this time in this family is because I do not see the whole picture. We do not see the whole picture, but the court of justice in the upper worlds does. And that court has said this child needs to be in this world for 700 days and then leave in this manner. And the souls around it and the souls in the world at that time all are impacted by that, whether they're conscious of that impact or not. Okay? Any other questions? Okay, we're talking about reincarnation. And briefly last week we spoke about the three reasons why people die. And that is because their time is up. The amount of days that they were given to live in this world, in this lifetime, have been completed. That's one reason. Another reason is that they've completed their correction before they were the number of days in this lifetime, so they'll be taken before that. And the third reason is because if they continue to stay in the world, they would continue to do negativity and continue to veil themselves. And therefore, in God's mercy, he takes them now so they don't make it worse for themselves by staying around. Let's understand a little bit more about the parts of the soul and the parts of the body and how they interrelate. We speak of a soul. In Hebrew, there are five levels of soul: nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida. Five Hebrew words. representing five levels of soul. There are 620 parts of the soul. 613 is another form that we speak of. Each part of the soul has those five levels. Now, there's also the first incarnation, the nephesh of a part of the soul. So let's use as an example the right lung. My right lung has a nephesh that has completed its tikkun, but its ruach, it has not, which is the next level up. My right lung cannot have the same ruach that it had in the previous lifetime. That's one of the spiritual laws. The second incarnation and third and more incarnations, the ruach and the nefesh cannot be from the same as the first one. And so an orphan, spiritually, is a ruach that is in a ruach riding on a nefesh that isn't its own. And therefore its relationship is that of called a stranger, called a ger. The orphan is the level of nefesh that is in a different relationship with a different ruach. But each part of the body has potentially these five levels of soul, and not necessarily from the same root of the soul. So let's discuss a little bit what is a root of a soul. There are three roots of soul. There is Adam, Cain, and Abel. They represent the roots of our souls. So an individual in today's life has 613 parts of the soul. In the 613 parts of the body, and the root of each one of those parts can be from any of those three sources. So my right lung could have a nefesh from Cain, a ruach from Adam, and a neshama from Abel. A yechida from somewhere else, one of those three roots. All of these different relationships between my right lung and the left lung, between my right lung and the blood vessels that go through that lung, each of those relationships represent a different root of the soul. Each of those relationships represents corrections within the body, within the soul. Now, how does this really matter to me? How does this help me in my life today, having this information, which comes from the gates of reincarnation, Sha'ar Gilgulim by Rabbi Isaac Luria? It's understanding that when I walk into a room and I'm saying, I'm me, Hanoch, when I walk into that room, Hanoch is a composite of all of these parts of the soul, with all of these roots of the soul. Because my right lung could have a neshama from the right heel of Adam. Doesn't have to be the same parts of the soul, because that's part of the tikkun walking in as that Hanukkah is a name for a composite of all of these different levels of soul. No, I do not have to know which part of my body comes from which part of my soul. But if I talk about the ethics of organ transplants, Hashem is doing that all the time. The souls are put into the parts of the body. The souls are integrating. The souls need to learn to work together. Otherwise, the body fails. The body doesn't work. This is all part of the corrections that take place unbeknownst to our conscious level. Now, we come into this world and into this body and are given a name that represents the composite of all of these parts of souls. There are other souls, more righteous souls, or more negative souls, that come to use this body with the permission of our soul, usually with the permission of our soul, but not always. These entities, these other souls, are called Iburim. They're called Iburs. Ibur is the way we, is the word in Hebrew that means pregnant. An Ibur is a soul that comes to help us. It comes to give us additional energy. It comes to achieve its own level of help, its own correction with our soul. And it is ultimately representative of our higher souls. So the Iburim is actually ourselves at a higher level of consciousness. There is another word in Hebrew, dibuk. Dibuk is a negative soul that comes to our body, not to help us, but to hinder us. That is what the rite of exorcism is about. And there is even another word describing another level of negative soul, called a damager. I don't remember the Hebrew, but the translation is a damager. And this soul comes specifically to do harm to you. It is extremely rare. Most dibuks come to escape having to go to Gehinnom, having to go to hell. I guess I got to even start back to give you some additional perspective. And I apologize for the way this order is being explained, but there's a reason why it's being explained this way. When a soul dies, the body is what dies. The body decomposes when the soul leaves it. The body returns to its root level of dust, except for one part of the body called the luz bone, which is the part of the spine just under at the top of the spine. The luz bone never decomposes. You can go into graves hundreds, thousands of years old, and there will be a luz bone. Everything else may have been decomposed, but the luz bone will always be there. The luz bone will be the root, the shoresh, for the resurrection of the dead. Each body represents a composite of souls. A composite of souls inhabits that body. That name that we are given is representative of the correction and the essence of that composite. composite levels of soul. We have Yibbur's that come to us every Shabbat, comes to help us utilize the light of Shabbat when our vessels are too small. It comes to help us in manifesting the light of Shabbat. When the body dies, the souls go through a tunnel. The tunnel is really the cave of Machpelah in Israel. And we've heard the reports by the people who have had clinical death. They went through a tunnel. There was a light at the end of the tunnel. They saw the shape of a man in the light. They were moving towards it. And then for some reason they were stopped. They are accurately describing what the Zohar tells us happens to the soul. It leaves the body. It wears another body, a spiritual body. And it floats through this tunnel. It is drawn to the light. It is drawn to this light. And the person or the body in the shape in the light is Adam. Adam and Eve. It is drawn into this light. And if it goes into the light, it goes to Gehinnom. It goes to Gan Eden, and it goes to Gehinnom. Everybody goes to Gehinnom, goes to hell for a second, for an instant. Those who have the merit to be reincarnated are immediately removed from hell and sent back to either a waiting location spiritually, which is called the lower Gan Eden, or they're sent to directly to be reincarnated. Sometimes the lower Gan Eden is when they will be reincarnated at a different time in a different century. But sometimes a soul can leave a body today and be born an hour later. Sometimes the soul can be leave the body today and be 300-400 years before they reincarnate. Every soul goes into Gehinnom and is cleansed. Every soul that studies Torah, that is moving in a spiritual frame, that is doing some correction of its soul, that soul gets cleansed in Gehinnom and then is elevated to the upper Garden of Eden to wait for the rest of the souls to complete themselves, to complete their correction. When the souls reincarnate, they may be mixed and matched again, totally different than before. So when I'm describing this process of the soul going through the tunnel, there's really 620 parts of the soul going through the tunnel. And each of those parts has a perception of themselves as a full human being, because each part has 620 parts. So this is a general understanding of what happens after death. But while we're alive, we have souls that come to help us with our tikkun. We have souls that help us that we allow to use our body to complete their specific action, which is also our specific action. So perhaps we have a correction with another person, another soul, that we need to exchange energy with. We need to say thank you to this person from something they did in the previous lifetime, but we're going to say thank you from something they did this lifetime, and it will apply to the previous non-time we didn't say thank you. That Ibor will come to us and ask permission to use the body. And when our soul says thank you, that Ibor is in the mouth and saying thank you. And that Ibor completes its correction. In exchange for assisting us, it may receive, in exchange for us assisting it, it will assist us in balancing the energy in our body, the energy of the Shabbat, the energy of the day, all of these different aspects that are too complex to really balance and understand on a simple physical level. But all of that is taking place at every instant of every day in all of the 6 billion people in the world. This is Hashem creating the world every instant. This is how we should really have this appreciation, this just to be in awe at the simplicity of the world and the complexity of the world that Hashem creates. Now I'm going to describe the birth process a little more detailed, because in the upper Gan Eden, we have a soul that has been told by Hashem, time to come into the physical world. That soul is male and female together. We learn that from the story of Adam and Eve, because Adam and Eve were born on Rosh Hashanah, were born back to back. On Rosh Hashanah, God separated them by sawing, is the term. God separated male and female. And during the 10 days from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, male and female grew and turned such that back to back became front to front. And then on Sukkot, the male and female started to hug. And on Simchat Torah, the day we dance with the Torah, they learned to kiss. All of this is a metaphor for understanding the relationships of male to female. We are born back to back. A soul is male and female together. In the process of coming into the physical world, this soul is separated, so that the two halves of one soul come into the world separated, both in space and in time. The term of soulmate, everybody everybody thinks is there's only one soulmate. And while that is true, what I just described to you is ultimately the soulmate. The one soulmate. But that one soulmate applies to one part of the body and soul. It applies in our world to these two parts, these two halves of one soul that go through a process of being separated and then coming together. Who is your soulmate? Ultimately, in your last lifetime, before achieving your correction for that part of the body, the soulmate for that part of the body will come to you in the person that you marry. But is that going to be the only person you could marry in that lifetime? No. Your soulmate can be an Ibur. It depends on the way you approach your correction. It depends on the relationships and what the correction is. A soulmate can be two business partners. They are soulmates. A soulmate can be two people who are jealous of each other. The instant they meet, they hate each other. Why? Because the root of their souls is in the same place, the same part of Abel, the same part of Cain. And as such, they're sharing the same energy. When Hashem sends energy into the world, their share, being the root of the same part of Abel, they're getting that same energy and they're in conflict. And so they walk into a room and they're introduced to each other and they hate each other immediately for no reason. A soulmate has any and many of these different attributes and consequences. So when we speak of soulmates, understand what you're asking. Every person that you come into contact with in your life is a soulmate on a certain level. Now, when you say, when am I going to meet my soulmate, or am I married to my soulmate? The answer is, you are married to your soulmate because you have a correction with that soul. And until that correction is achieved, you can't go on to the next one. Oh yes, physically you can divorce. But if your correction isn't complete, the two of you are going to remarry in another lifetime. The two of you are going to meet each other again as business partners. The two of you are going to be born into the same physical family so you can achieve your correction, your tikkun, together. I haven't even touched the subject of soulmates. I haven't completed the subject of the Iburim. I haven't even completed the concepts of the back-to-back growing into face-to-face and into zivug, intercourse and hugging and kissing. But we are out of time. And so, before I leave you, does anybody have any questions? Tomorrow night at 10 p.m. L.A. time, we will be having an intermediate class continuing our discussion of the Tree of Life. Tomorrow night, the subject is Netzach and Hod, the two spherot that are sometimes one and sometimes two. On Thursday night at 10 p.m. L.A. time, we will be reading from the Zohar, from the portion of Bo, I invite you all to join us. I will mention that I have developed, I had stumped me, but I've created a full name analysis that is complex to do for each person. It takes me about 3 hours of work. But I have put on the website an example of a full name analysis for you to decide if it's something you'd like for yourself. And if you do, please just send me an email requesting it. Does anybody have any questions? Have a beautiful evening, and we will speak to you soon. Shalom.